Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Real Talk. It's Lucas here, and I hope that today's episode informs and inspires you to have your own real conversations. As always, today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Trivan, maker of trucks, trailers, and enclosure buildings tailored to your needs. Be sure to check them out at trivan.com. A huge thanks to them for sponsoring the show and making it possible. One other quick note before we get into today's episode is that if you are willing and able, if you could leave a review, preferably a five-star one, on any of the podcast networks or platforms that allow for it, such as Spotify or Apple Podcasts, that will be much appreciated as it helps get the word out there and lets people know what we're all about. So, with that in mind, on to the episode. Hey everybody, welcome to a Real Talk Roundup. It's been a minute since we've done one of these, and today we're recapping the last three. And of course, John has a segment for us at the end of the show. But today's three words of the day are business, babies, and binary to kind of capture the last three. So John's going to talk about some of the most impactful books that you guys want to know from the various staff members over at RP. So himself, Mark, Jan, a few other, Marty, a few other fine folks there, all provided their most impactful books. So John's got a list of the top 10. And he wants to share at the end of the episode, so stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, you know what? Let's just check in. How's it going, John? What's going on in your life these days?
Yeah, it's going good. We finished up the latest issue on how to marry younger. So how's that for a provocative title, especially when the editor got married at, I think I was 35. So
like there's a parable about the something in the eye related to that.
Yes. It's an issue I should send back in time or something, and maybe I could pick it up, but
yeah, Alex wrote a piece in there, and she's not even married, so
no. It doesn't always work out, but I will say I wrote a piece in it too that is from the future, actually, about 25 years in the future, from a future grandfather me that I was writing to a grandson I don't yet have, with the lessons that I should have learned myself. So a little bit of time travel going on in there. It looks to be a good one.
Right on. Cool. Well, that's hitting the printer these like right now, basically, as we're recording this week, I believe. So by the time you're listening to this, it should likely be available in your local church. So be sure to check out the next edition. I think 84 pages, John.
Yeah.
Pretty sizable. It
should land with a thud.
Yes, it will land with a thud and stay on your coffee table, as Tyler likes to say. Any news out in Calgary, Tyler? What's going on there?
No, it's been a bit since I've been on Real Talk, so it's seems to be like we're trading a few episodes, like a handful of episodes back and forth these days. So just with life being busy on both ends, but no, I don't know. We just had snow the last couple of days, and it's May, so it's melting now, so that's good. Spring's arriving. About a month later than in Ontario, so everything's good over here.
Right on. Yeah, it's sunny skies, and I don't know, it's got to be over 20 degrees right now, so yeah, not sad about that for sure. Okay, cool. So we're gonna get into the last three episodes here. So I think we'll start with the one that was the furthest in the past. So I did this one with Reverend Sam Andreotti's, who, by the way, just for a preview for listeners, we have an episode coming up in a few weeks with him again on a different topic on dating, which has been a topic that's been requested pretty heavily over the years. So we're finally actually tackling that. Him and his wife are coming on, and my wife and I are sitting down to chat with him about his book. So that should be a great combo. So stay tuned for that one. But in the meantime, I chatted with him. So the issue, it was about transgenderism, but it's not the same as other transgender episodes. So we've covered this issue in the past. I know we've had the ARPA guys on. We've multiple other guests have talked about this. But the point of this book and the point of the message he is trying to get across is, how do we deal with this issue now that it is here and will be more and more present in our churches, both, you know, obviously for kids of church families in certain situations, and then also for people who are coming back from it, detransitioning and whatnot, coming into the church life, looking for help and looking for salvation. Ultimately, how do we help these people along? How do we do that in a practical manner? How do we do that in a way that, yeah, is loving but still firm, but helps them along in their journey back to the way God created them. So that's kind of my little preview on it. So if you haven't listened to it, feel free to go check it out. I think there's a lot of good value in that episode. I learned a lot from him. And I guess I'll go to John first on this one. What were your thoughts listening to that episode, John? Did you find it refreshing at all, or did you think, ah, this is a little more the same old?
Well, I think you guys touch on maybe the key issue is a vision of gender, because it's what's being washed over the differences between male and female. We kind of have it being fought in the world over sports, so there's some differences recognized there. But off the pulpit, what is your pastor going to say about different gender roles? Like, what kind of preaching do you get from God's word as to setting out a vision for gender? I don't think that happens too much. I think we, our parents' generation, well, my parents, your grandparents, but our parents' generation might have just assumed a lot, and then we all started questioning it because the world was questioning it, and we discovered that there's nothing in the Bible that says that a woman has to know how to bake a pie, and a guy has to be off in an office building, that God doesn't prescribe it that way. So then people thought that there were no roles whatsoever. And as you, I think, said in that episode, some about, it rains in the world, it leaks in the church. I think we're still holding on to gender roles, but I almost wonder if some of it's more stereotype than biblical. But then what is the biblical? That's the question I'm still wrestling with myself as a dad of three girls. I feel like I'd have an easier time figuring that out for sons, but trying to figure out for my girls, what do I want to tell them is the differences between guys and girls? Some
Yeah.
of them are obvious, but
Yeah, you guys touched a bit on that, like not to default to the traditional necessarily gender roles as being the truth, and to go back to scripture to just to see what gender roles actually should be made of. And to be fair, I think there's definitely room from the old, I don't know when what time period I'd be talking, but probably a few generations ago, where gender roles were very much siloed at, and stereotype, basically where our stereotypes come from. But I the one thing that I thought of, this brings to mind from the episode, was the conversation you guys had about painting your nails and stuff. And it was like, what your reaction is to seeing your kids do something like, or one of your boys say painting his nails, and like how you would react as a parent. And I think it kind of goes back to the discussion about gender roles. And yeah, I don't know, like it's not, you say like the point is it's not wrong, but then on the other hand, it like because of where culture is, it almost is wrong. Like it's like you, like I think Lucas, you made this point, it was like you're feeding into that the cultural, the cultural movement, I guess. You're like helping it along by doing something like this. Even like
Yeah, like
unknowing.
what are you signaling? Yeah, like what are you signaling, or what are you? I mean, I think if I recall correctly, the discussion came down to what is your intent ultimately. But if you're
Yeah,
whatever.
but I know that's where the discussion went, but I question whether or not that's where it should go, because it's similar to like, so we had a hockey tournament, and I think like the story I heard was, so there was someone on the ice who his friend said, why don't you put rainbow tape on your stick? And so he was like, I think he lost a bet or something, so they had to do that. But he does it in a mocking way. But even playing on the other team in a Christian tournament, you didn't, like, we weren't in on this joke. Like, we have no idea. And so now you have a guy out there who, in all accounts, from an outsider perspective, is skating around supporting the gay movement inside a Christian hockey tournament. It doesn't matter that it is a joke or ironic or sarcastic, whatever it is. It's the act of doing it that now plays into like how you get viewed. And so like a guy painting their nails, it almost doesn't matter why you're doing it, like in my mind. So like I kind of went, like you said the same thing, was like, you were on the his first reaction was like no. His second, option as a parent was like, yes, let's embrace everything. And the third option was like, he was portraying as a Christian argument, which was like, let's find out why you're doing it and then discover like maybe we shouldn't do this. And I'm like, I think the first option saying no should come along with a conversation, but I don't think no is the wrong answer in some of these cases.
Yeah, and I don't think he was saying you can't say no. Yeah,
No, he wasn't.
I know that is a good example of the tape, though. I hadn't really thought about it, but the
He was
intelligence.
saying, don't shout now.
Yeah, he was just looking for like what he's trying to avoid is the parent just saying absolutely not and not giving any sort of rationale. Because if you think about the situation, like it's probably going to be some confused teenage boy doing that, right? So then, like, yeah, what's their intent? They don't even know their intent. Like maybe it's to fit in, or maybe it's to be different, or whatever. Right? Like, there's a lot of judgment call, or a lot of judgment in the call the parent has to make there. So maybe intent isn't the best strategy.
My thought is like if it is something like that signals to other people something, like you're actually doing something beyond what your expressiveness or whatever you want to say, whether it's a joke, whether it's whatever, it goes beyond that, and other people are affected by your decision. And so I think there's definitely like there's a way to say absolutely not and explain yourself. But I think we're getting away from this attitude in parenting where we can say no. And I don't think that's right. Like we need to be able to. And some of these things that seem arbitrary and the things the world would just go, wow, like come on. Like, does it really matter? It's like, well, like sometimes it just does. Like there's a line in the sand. Let's just draw it already.
Do you think, John, do you think that's true? Like, do parents today have a harder time saying no?
Well, I think where parents resort to no, just no, is oftentimes when that's all they got. So they have really good sniff detectors. They know this is total, garbage. But then they now have to be able to explain it to their kid, and they're having some troubles. And to get back to sort of the vision for gender, yeah, where find me a passage of the Bible that says you can't paint your nail, and dad doesn't have anything. And it's like, well, what is actually wrong with that? Well, you're coming off a little bit effeminate. Well, what's wrong with coming off a little bit effeminate? Everybody's got a bit of a, feminine side. Yeah, well, oh, hey, Dad, aren't you supposed to be compassionate and kind and loving? What's a, well, and then your dad's just like, get the paint off your finger. Well, I think we need to be able to articulate some things that are confused in the world, and we need to get a better go of it in the church. I think gender is a huge one because God has given us some really straight lines. So there's hard complementarian, there's soft complementarian. Soft complementarian is just like, don't preach. That's the difference. Don't preach, don't be elders, and everything else, guys and girls, just the same. Hard complementarian says, something maybe more in keeping with what you might expect in the 1950s. Gender roles, mom does this, dad does that, and there's fixed and certain lines. Yeah, okay. And I will say I eke towards the hard, but I don't want to pretend that it's I don't want to pretend there's an 11th commandment that says that's the way it is. And so with Andrides, he gave two definitions of what a real man is and what a real woman is. I don't know if you recall them, but it was along the lines of a real man lays down his life for the women close to him. And I like the definition, but I had a problem with I guess the women close to him, because I'm called to do that for my wife. I'm called to do that for my daughters. And there's a general sense in which, guys are just called to do that for just about everybody. But then I'm called to do that for you guys too, in that general sense. But I don't have, my neighbor's nice lady. I don't feel like I have a call to her, even though she's close to me. A real woman, his definition was along the lines of consistently, I think consistently with joy advances the mission of the men close to him or her, along those lines. Again, I would say, that might fit with my wife. And that might even fit with my kids, my daughters. They can help out with RP. They could, write a book review or something. But my wife does not have that call for anybody else. Like, I don't think, no matter how close they are, except again in that general sense that we all do. So I wonder, I liked a lot of what you're saying, but I guess, like to ask him about that. And at the same time, here's a guy who's actually sticking his neck out and trying to give a definition. And I don't even think, too many of us are brave enough to try that. So it's valuable, and I think we need more of it. Even if I don't think it was necessarily like maybe he would agree with what I just said. That's what I meant. I meant, the ladies in your life. Like,
Yeah,
yeah, I
obviously
think
it has to be, the
that's
definition has to be
close.
broad enough to, yeah, to cover closest to you, because not everyone's in the same situation relationally, but it definitely is a definition that has some merit. It's just a matter of what, or to what extent it is it is the complete definition.
It was nice to hear, though. Like you say, John. Like no one, or not no one, but almost nobody will go out and give a definition of that or say things like, "Yeah, you're a guy." Like it comes with a responsibility to like you protect your wife, protect your kids, especially if they're daughters. Like there's just that is a real element of life that people don't talk about that much, probably because it's not, it doesn't happen that often. Like we live in a pretty safe place generally. But that is the understanding, and I think that is the biblical understanding. That's the creation. That's the way God has set things up, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
because if the church can't give some clear talk about the difference in the genders, and then the world is confused, where do they go? And I think it comes out in all sorts of different big ways and small. Like it struck me. Have you guys heard of Caitlin Clark, the NCAA
Oh, basketball.
3-point shooter? Yeah, girl can shoot from absolutely insane range in basketball. But she just got what everybody said was the record for most points in Division One basketball. She scored more than Pete Maravich from the 1960s. And people noted, hey, you know what? She did it in like 130 games, and he did it in 80 or 90. So, he did in 3 years, she did in 4 years. So they're noting these differences. But what they didn't know is that, she has a slightly smaller ball. And she plays a completely different sport. She plays women's basketball. I mean, you might as well say that she has more points than the leading NCAA hockey scorer. She doesn't play men's basketball. She did not pass him. They don't play this. They don't play. It's ridiculous. Like, I mean, I get why people do it, because they're both bouncing a ball on a same size court. It's not the same sport. And we have this weird thing where we're kind of making comparisons that just aren't comparisons. And the
Sports
church
world
needs
just
to
needs
help
something to
out.
talk about. That's what.
Yeah, but I mean, did any Christian go, you know what? That they're different sports. No, they said they're different eras. But they're completely different sports. Guys and girls sports are different.
They are. I agree with you on that, John, but just for fun, I'll play devil's advocate. Like, it's a woman playing a woman's game, which is like the fundamentals of the game are the same in both sports. Like it's a bit slightly disingenuous to call, like compare it to NCAA hockey. Like it is, that's completely different, right? So I like to compare. You can't say really that she beat the record. Like I wouldn't agree with that because it's just men and women. It's two different things. But at least it's women's basketball in a women's basketball setting and men's basketball in a men's basketball setting. You know what I'm saying?
But I guess the thing is, I've scored more points than, the leading Antarctica, basketball league. I've never played in it, but, I have more points than anybody there. I it's just, I'm not part of that. And she wasn't part of men's basketball. So it's, you can see the visual comparisons, but I guess where I'm just going with it is we overlook these differences, and that's how you got men into women's sports. That's how you got these transgender folk pretending that they could just segue right in. It's like, no, it's not. There are fundamental differences, most obvious in the physical ways, and then it's our joy and our one of the blessings of getting married is I grew up with two brothers, a wonderful mom, but at the same time, not a lot of exposure to the gentler sex, and then I kind of grew up thinking we were all the same. Then you get married and you get three daughters and you realize, wow. Now, I still can't put a thumb on it. I wouldn't do well with making up my own definition, but there are some real differences. And we would do well to be exploring those without being really fearful about, offense and all that. I think one of the things he said too was stereotypes versus archetypes, right? Let's not pretend that the Bible says, this 100-point list about what a woman should be doing. God decided not to do that. And at the same time, he does have two means of revealing himself in his word and in just the world, in his creation. And we do learn a lot from our interaction. He also talked about how gender is something you explore through relationship. Yeah, we do learn something from interacting with the other gender.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah,
This actually ties really. Oh, go ahead,
oh,
Ty.
sorry.
You ruined my segue.
You want to
Go ahead.
transition this thing? I want to, I was one other thing I was thinking about with this episode. I don't know. I kind of wanted your guys' opinion on it because the reaction to he mentioned one way to help people who detransition, although it might be a bit different for people in our churches who are struggling with this, was the bathroom thing in your church to like have a bathroom. It doesn't cause this whole argument that we're having in the culture. Like we have men's and women's. Let's just like accommodate. Yeah, even use the word accommodate, which already rubbed me wrong. But then I wonder, like, yeah, he compared it to like, I forget exactly how he did it, but he compared it to like other sinful things like prostitution or something like that. And like welcoming these people
Oh,
despite their sin, but then to like not put stumbling blocks in the way of like them joining the church. And I was sympathetic to that until it's like, well, we don't like allow the prostitute to like entertain her, or his, I guess, like way of life while accepting them into the church. Like I don't understand really that argument with the bathrooms, other than like, yeah, it's awkward, but also and the like the safety of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I thought he used the example, I think, if I remember correctly, of like someone who goes to prison for child sex crimes or whatever, but like they repent, they come back, whatever. So, like, yeah, you're going to let them in the church. Are you going to leave them unsupervised near a child? No. But like, yeah, you're going to welcome them back in. And over time, I'm sure some level of trust gets built back up, but you have to be responsible about that. So I don't know. Accommodate. I get where you're going on that, and it might rub you the wrong way. That's fair, but I think you can do it in such a way that's respectful, but still, yeah, it's like kind of the trust but verify. Like we believe that you are sincere and you're coming back, but also, yeah, we're probably gonna like post up around the washroom and make sure nothing's going on, sort of thing.
Yeah, there's accommodate and there's accommodate, and he's envisioning a future that maybe I'm not seeing hit us quite so forcefully. But if you're in a big city with your church in the mix there, yeah, you're going to have a lot of people coming in confused and troubled. And yeah, I don't know that this word I'd want him to say if we are doing like a Christian Reform podcast where it's like accommodate. They would understand that word differently because they've lost their moorings. But when you know what's right and what's wrong, then you say, do we welcome the prostitute? Yes, we do. Oh, now she's bringing in a client. No, we don't do that. You know what the line is. Hey, she's not dressed quite right. Oh, well, no big deal. Oh, she's half naked. No, that's not going to happen. You know what your mooring is. And so here it's like there are some confused people coming in and they need, and frankly, our building codes, as Lucas said, pretty much have this standard now that there's going to be some standalone bathroom anyway. But it's like, while you're confused, we still welcome you. And we don't think that there's, that you can become the other. And there's, we got to wash a person either way.
Yeah, that's
Okay,
fair.
cool.
Well, let's transition to because this whole topic of gender relates very closely to, I think, Mark's chat on or Mark's interview he did with me, I guess, on Be Fruitful and Multiply. But yeah, I think well, is that a stretch to say, John? Like, if we lose our way on gender, probably a couple things. Maybe one, it takes longer to get married and to know what it means to be married and to, you know, find a person of the opposite sex. And then two, I suppose, yeah, if you settling first of all into your role as husband and wife, and then secondly as father and mother too, there's you need to get the gender right before you move forward. So is that a fair comparison? Do you think the roots of it are in that movement to a degree, John?
Well, what does it mean to be a man?
Yeah.
Well, what I can crush people in my hockey pool. I can. I got my cat here. I'm strong. I can. Where are your stereotypes for manhood coming from? And if they're confused, then maybe you're finding your sense of identity and just all sorts of other things.
Anyone's on YouTube, you can see the comic relief. I'm basically in my basement, and John has his cat all over the screen. So, shout
I
out
locked it
to
out. Apparently, I locked it in, but no. If you don't recognize the differences between genders, you're not even appreciating what you can find in someone else. Andrides too talked about the marriage being a shadow of the Trinity. So. You know, you're not incomplete if you're not married, but there is a sense of completeness being married. So I think they are related, all sorts of these confusions.
Ty, what was your big takeaway from that episode that we did with Mark?
Yeah, mostly like I've been listening to some other things too, but like yeah, I understand that where the issue comes from, but then also like where is it going and the problem that it actually is that we don't really realize it is in the world, or like not having a lot of kids with demographic shifts and stuff like that. I'm forever surprised at the statistics behind that, and I think Mark brought those to light like fairly recently, and yeah, you start considering where our culture might go based on those statistics, even. I know it's kind of something that's been beat to death, but if you start really thinking about it, and yeah, there have been some interesting interviews lately. I saw actually when I was doing that research from way back, probably months ago, when I did the interview with Vander Clay, he actually covered a few videos of people talking about this and just the impact that changing demographics based on people not having kids like can have, and how quickly over a few generations, which we don't like to think about because it's like generations, whatever, that's beyond me because it's just one, but how quickly that impacts literally everything, like your whole culture, your whole country. You raise up a generation that, yeah, and I think we see that like even in our churches, like every generation is a different kind of, I don't know, feel or like has a bit of a different outlook on things, how quickly those things move. And all of a sudden, 3 generations from now, you're smaller and you have different issues because, yeah, because you're just not having kids. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely some other stuff in there about like just to reflect on personally in your like in your family and how you view kids and how you view that. You know, in relation to your family dynamic, but yeah, that kind of struck me.
Yeah, I thought it was a good, well, I like Mark's very balanced and scriptural and in his approach and measured, but also, you know, I was talking about this with Elle, like my wife last night too. Like, you just sometimes the Bible, you just you teaching of the Bible hit you, and you're like, oh, I don't know if I like that, but it's probably true, huh? And I think this is one of those topics where you're like, yeah, if you're being faithful, I think you have to carefully consider it one child at a time, and search your heart to make sure you're not doing, you know, not having a kid, I guess, not having a kid for a selfish reason, and instead looking to be faithful in your life. And of course, there's lots of factors in that, and I'm by no means making some sort of blanket statement, but generally, as we see where the trends are at, people are having less kids. They should be having more kids. They can have more kids in most cases. And I think we need to say that more. So we got some good feedback on this too, I think, for some people who felt that way. Because yeah, I think a lot of people are just picking a number. And that was kind of my mentality even coming into marriage. I'm like, oh yeah, like I think this would be a nice number, whatever. But then the further along I get, and I'm not far, but you just think, oh, I guess we just see how it goes, because you just don't know how life happens.
You're further along
And
in the number of kids than you are in number of years married, so that's
well, yeah,
doing
it
great
wasn't the
so far.
plan. It wasn't the plan, like I said in the episode, but things happen, and things happen for a reason too. And it's yeah, so we got our second on the way shortly. So hopefully next time we do a roundup, we'll have an announcement in that regard. But yeah, I don't know. Am I out to lunch, John? Am I saying silly things out of youthful
Yeah.
naivete, or am I on the mark here to a degree?
No, I talked to Mark and I said, wouldn't it be cool if, the world is pulling us in this direction, and instead of your reasonable and balanced approach, Mark, what I'd like you to do is just be crazy and tell everybody they have to have 14 kids so they'll all get pulled off in the right direction. And I shouldn't even say 14 is crazy, because 14 could be awesome, but I wanted him to say that. We should all have that so that people start going, oh, 6 kids, 8 kids, 10 kids. Yeah, that could be a thing. There is a lady in our congregation who had, I actually don't know how many kids herself. I'm kind of imagining 7 or 8, but she has 100 grandchildren, 100 grandchildren and great grandchildren, well beyond that actually at this point. And what a blessing. Like, she's a lovely lady. She never has a birthday party not to go to. It is a wonderful thing, and she is able to see it through the generations. So one of the things that struck me with that episode was, another topic that we don't talk much about is just the contraceptive mentality. There's easy points to hit on. Don't use a contraceptive that might cause abortions. Okay, that's kind of a little bit more in the black and white side. But things changed in the 1960s, as Mark noted, that now you could divorce procreation from sex completely. And we know that the implications of that for the world were really horrible. Right now, you just don't have marriage. It breaks everything down. Well, what are the implications for the church? Maybe it didn't break marriage down as much, but now we can decide exactly how many kids we're going to have, give or take. Okay, does that mean that we just reject that because of where it came from? I'm not going to go that far, but I am going to say that should at least be a reasonable thought. Like, it should be a thought that you have, that you question. Hey, this had absolutely wicked ramifications in the world. Should I be using this? Now, the answer can be yes. It could be yes, but it shouldn't be unexamined. And I think now we've just got the assumption, yeah, you know what? I decide how many kids I'm going to have. Yeah. Now, I will say that there are many reasons that it can be a blessing to be able to decide that. The health, mother's just not able to deal with another pregnancy, all sorts of things. So I want to clarify what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying the default.
Now you're taking that middle road. You're
Well,
supposed
I'm
to be
saying
radical.
10 kids should not be a crazy thought. When I said 14, like I think I know somebody who had 14 kids, and it's a wonderful family. So I don't want to say that's crazy.
On the higher end. Let's at
It's on
least
the
say that.
higher, it's on the higher end. But yeah, what a mighty force. What could God work with that kind of a family?
I do wonder, like, part of it's obviously cultural, like you described from the 1960s, the changing, the changing culture, but then also our changing attitudes on gender roles, like we just talked about before. And then just the idea of the culture's pushed on, like, having a fulfilled life in a sense is X and Y and isn't. And we've obviously, I think we've fallen prayed at that a little bit, like Lucas said in that episode, was like, when it rains out in the world, it drips in the church. It's like the same thing. It's like you might not think that, but you kind of act it out a little bit. And so, like, yeah, it would be interesting to see people. Like, I don't know of anyone in, I don't know. It's hard to say, but like in my generation, I don't know that anyone has ever expressed to me the possibility of having even more than maybe five or six kids, maybe seven. And that would be like crazy. Like you're the crazy one. But that's, yeah, I don't know. I wonder though how much of it is a cultural thing, and how much of it is a part of our circumstances, like economically, politically. Are we in a spot now as young people that we feel like the minority in the culture, and so we just, and I think the Muslims would probably tackle that by having more kids, but seems like we are like maybe shrink back a bit, or yeah, I don't know. Like economically, it's like, yeah, it's tough to, you got to basically go buy $1.5 million house to, like, that's how we feel about it. Is that the reality? Probably not. If you talk to somebody who's like your great grandfather, who's, they probably had 12 kids in a 3-bedroom house, it was fine. And maybe we got to get back to that, because it's just something. I think there's other barriers here too.
Yeah, I think my dad eventually did get his grade 12, but he wasn't working. He was working instead of doing high school because they had a large family, and they, I think my grandfather at one point was sick, and so then the kids just start pitching in. I do think there's something where maybe our expectations are raised a little bit. I do also think that we can just definitively start denouncing, the wickedness of energy policies that just make living more expensive. This is all to save the planet, and it comes with implications for what it means that God said, be fruitful and multiply. God gave a direct command, and did he say that Canada has to save the world? No, that's actually not put into their wheelhouse. It's not it's beyond them and
I think you see
beyond
that changing, like that attitude, like the environment thing. Also, another huge expense that maybe people assumed is university college. Like, I think there's a big shift there too that's coming. That's like, you don't assume that, like, your kids have to save for university, or you have to save for your kids' university. Maybe that's a better way to put it. That's probably more prevalent. Like, oh, I need to start a fund. I'm gonna have a kid, I gotta start their college fund. You hear that all the time. It's like, you. That's not like a justif that's not a thing you can say to like prove that you're stewardly with your wealth. Like, I think that's like, well, one day we're gonna send him into a snake pit. You're like, okay, great. I think that's changing a little bit. And so like those expenses, like things that come along with that, yeah, maybe one of those things that's a barrier. Like, well, how am I gonna pull all my kids through school? I mean, we have the same thing. We have maybe the same thing with Christian education, but it costs the same to put like 14 kids through our school system, so just send her.
I think at the end of the day, I don't know if it's, man, it's complicated, but maybe it's not complicated. Like, it's just you have an easier life, a simpler life, a life where you can do more things selfishly if you have less children, typically. It's just you have more children, that's a lot more responsibility. So I
Then
just
when you
like
get to
to
your end of your
think,
life,
like,
like
it's just.
having 100 great grandkids. Is like, I look at my grandparents too. It's like, you have an actual huge get together. There's like 80, 90 people there. Like, what a, I think about it because I'm like, kind of in that, you're kind of in that stage of life now where like, I'm married with a couple kids. So you're kind of getting away from like, I mean, we also moved away, so that doesn't help. But like, it used to be like, you did everything with your parents. And then you kind of like, people get married in and everyone's still a group. And then you starting your own. Like, you can't all get together all the time. And so then you start thinking like, but at the end of your life, it's like usually like your grandparents and like all people that were born from them, which is crazy. Like 80 or 90 people. Like, what a, there's probably nothing better in your old age.
Yeah, and an inconceivable, like, just the world can't even fathom that contrast. For us to say somebody has 100 grandchildren is remarkable, but not unbelievable. For them, it's just flat out unbelievable.
Yeah,
Yeah,
they'll
it's a
have
mindset.
four. Like,
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay. Well, that covers two of them. And then the final episode, I don't have a great segue for this at all, but business. I guess I could segue it. So if you want to have a large family and you want to have a school system that's flourishing and you want to have institutions in the community to support said families and said churches and whatnot, you need to have businesses that are successful and thriving, and not just small ones. You need some big ones too to write the big checks, as we talked about in that episode. So I just recently re-listened to this. I hate listening to myself, but I forced myself to do it, and it was great because the guys did most of the talking and had all the wisdom. So I thought it was I really enjoyed it. People seemed to like it doing it live, which was pretty fun. That was a nice little experiment. So I think we are definitely willing to do more of that in the future. So stay tuned for announcements down the road on that. We have nothing for sure, but
Our
we would
podcast
certainly like to
tour.
podcast tour, yeah, Real Talk tour. Yeah, honestly, let us know. Drop a comment on social media or YouTube, or send us an email. Let us know if that's something you'd come out to if it was fairly local. But yeah, anyways, enough of me chattering. I'll go to Ty first on this one, then we'll go back to John. What'd you think about this episode? And yeah, what'd you think about it?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I liked it. It was live, but you couldn't really tell much. You shared some laughter. I think we should put like a laugh track in there for every joke that was made. But there was
Yeah.
it
There
was
was
good.
more
I
than you would think.
liked I loved, first off, like format wise, I liked how you didn't ask the same guy the same question around the table. It was kind of like built off itself. Like I thought it was really well done that way. And the guests were great. Jake and Brad and Aaron. And obviously they have a ton to teach, and they were being pretty humble about it. Like they probably could, I think if the second hour, they probably would have got a little more comfortable, not bragging about themselves, but really like saying what they learned. So, but it was, yeah, we chatted about this episode quite a bit because we were throwing this idea of the live thing around, and obviously being in business, Lucas and I, so just talking about entrepreneurship and what it means to our communities. And yeah, it's one of those things that I think, I mean, it obviously biased because we're entrepreneurs and we're business owners, and but yeah, the attitude that our others in the community have toward big business in the community, like in our churches, yeah, as you mentioned, Lucas, like it's necessary to kind of keep these institutions that we've built going. And a lot of people work in these institutions and volunteer for them, like Anchor and Campfire and all these things in Ontario specifically. And there's more all over the country, but those things, a lot of them exist because of people who have built these businesses that can afford to pay for some of this stuff. And it's something that I don't think we think about a ton. We take for granted a little bit in the community. And also, I don't know if we hold it against the people who are successful, but it's so hard for us, like as sinful humans, to be excited for other people who are successful. Like it just always is. And so I think it was a really important conversation. And I think we should have more of this going on, and just understanding like what is it about business, and even like we're pretty good at embracing small business, like and I mean whatever, not small business wouldn't be like Walmart is big business, but like small businesses, and like a farmer or a contractor, guy who hires one or two people, but it's kind of businesses that live out their days in the life of the business owner. And hearing from some guys who are really thinking beyond that to being like, we need businesses that are saleable, are that live beyond the owner. And it seems like our culture tells us that's selfish and that's the top 1% and whatever. And I mean, I think you guys did a good job of touching on like why some of those things are necessary in terms of growing for your employees, growing for the community, and providing like just profit and getting like growing so that you can give. And so I think it's really important, and it's something that we probably need to better understand in general. And then from both the community side, like people who don't own a business, but then from the business owner side, like, or entrepreneurs, like people who are aspiring to that, not to feel bad about it and to think about it correctly and Christianly, and then to use your talents that you're given, and to really embrace it. Yeah, I think we need it.
What's that, John? Go ahead, man.
Yeah, I guess as a guy who's not an entrepreneur, it took me a while to figure out what all these business types were doing behind the scenes. But then, as you get older, you get on a fundraising committee for this or that or the other thing, and then you just start seeing. And I just thought I would give one example and just some of the wrinkles, the ripples that happened from it. In Winnipeg, Premier Printing employs a lot of people. But it's also the impetus behind both Clarion and Reform Perspective. We're now separate from them, but they birthed us basically. And they also birthed something called Premier School Agendas, which was big across Ontario, big, eventually got sold. But here in Linden, there are all sorts of independent entrepreneurs. A lot of them spent some time working for Premier School Agendas. They got nurtured, they got taught, they got challenged, and then they went off and did their own things. So the ripples from Premier Printing have, through the generations, been enormous. And they just continue. And then you go and look at some of the big names that the one that sproul to mind is R.C. Sproul. Just, I think he had a widow or somebody who was backing him, but just he was free to do what he was able to do because of her. Otherwise, you might never have heard of R.C. Sproul, right? So the importance of what people are doing, I just had no idea, and it's amazing the more I learn. One of the things that a number of people on the panel said repeatedly was that it's not your money. They wanted to keep remembering it's not your money. I think that's one thing that could be preached off the pulpit. I think we could do with maybe a few more fire and brimstone kind of sermons on the 10th commandment, because not only does that apply to the entrepreneur or just all of us with our money and whatever's been entrusted to us, it also applies to that businessman's money is not your money. Don't make plans for it. Don't make assumptions about it. Don't be jealous about it. Don't envy. Don't covet. It's not yours. It's their responsibility. You can bring opportunities to them, but God entrusted to them to do something with. You can challenge them. You can do all sorts of things, but it's not your money. And I think that's as important to remember too, because yeah, why are we sort of jealous of their success? Or maybe we're not aware of all the things that they're doing, but even if we're not aware, it ain't our business. It might be their elders' business, it might be their friends' business a little bit. We are our brother's keeper, but it's not your money.
Yeah, that was definitely a theme that was reiterated again and again.
Yeah, I think a lot of times, like, you sit down and like I've been on fundraising committees or whatever, and you look at your budget, even a church budget at the end of the year, and you just know historically these like people pick up the tab. And you're like, oh, it's a shortfall. But usually around this time of year, we and it's yeah, I mean, yeah, to your point, John, it's like something you can't really it's not something that we should just lean on. And yet, as a business owner, it's something that you should aspire to, like to help the community and to be able to do that.
I'd like to say just a bit differently, because I do think we can lean on it, because it is God's provision. Like, we can go, as part of the school board and say, if God's gifted you with the ability, we're asking you to help us now. I think we can lean on it, but we can't envy it. Like, we got to just check ourselves, right? What a blessing it is, and somehow we turned it into a curse, right?
Yeah, and like there's like, they spoke to it too, and you could tell from these guys, you can feel their heart in what they're saying, even though they're trying not to show it a little bit. That, like, and I felt the same thing in business. Like, you kind of get into entrepreneurship sometimes, especially when you're young, I think, to get that freedom. You want your to do your own schedule. You think it's gonna pay me more. I have like all the decisions. I think Brad mentioned that in the episode. He's like,
Yeah,
I
it's
loved it.
fine.
Like, it was like all my, yeah. He's like, I get to make all my own decisions, and that's also the worst thing. It's like, so you get into it for those reasons, and then you realize it's actually the worst. But it's the people that you get to help along the way that literally, like, I know Aaron spoke to it a little bit in the episode, was he was just blown away. He's like, you give people responsibility, and then you, his, he said his most, basically his most stressful thing in life is figuring out more opportunity to help his people. And like, it's the most rewarding thing. And also like being able to have people from the church come alongside you as an entrepreneur, like to grow the business and to like make it something that's kind of beyond all the individuals that are a part of it is huge. It's just, it's the best part of doing business. And I think that these guys who run big businesses have that, and they, you know, obviously appreciate all their people, but it's not really about the money. Like, and you could tell these guys, like they live that it's not your money mindset, which is really cool. It's good to see. And like, it's just good to have that example. And I mean, they mentioned reading books and stuff about that too. And just learning to live that out.
Yeah, I think the one that Aaron mentioned was Gary Miller, I believe. It's not, I think it's called It's Not Your Business. So,
Yeah, and Randy Alcorn is a treasure principal.
not Randy Mulder, the local real estate agent. That shows a funny slip of the tongue. But yeah, it was my main question going into that was the one you could probably tell in the episode. I kept hammering them on like the when is enough enough? Like, how do you guys think about growth sort of thing? But I probably should have just like read the Bible because like the parable of the talents is basically the answer to that. It's like if you have the ability, keep growing. And you'll find out if you don't, if you hit a certain plateau. And even if you hit that plateau, probably you just need more knowledge and you talk to someone else. Then either you add someone to your team if that makes sense, or they also said that doesn't always make sense. And you have to think about other solutions. And sometimes you will just hit a plateau and then it's about providing opportunities inside or maybe outside the business, who knows, or doing a spin-off business like Bruce and Brad do. So
Yeah. But they talked about that, like hitting your head on the ceiling kind of thing. But I also think you hit it like, kind of like, I mean, business mentors and, or coaches and stuff like that, even from the world, will talk about like having friends who support you to a certain level of success. And then once you kind of get past that, they're not really all that helpful anymore. Not just in like teaching you or helping you, but also in like, they're not proud of you anymore because you kind of get too big for them to wrap their head around. And I find like the ability to grow is something that's, or the grow like always growing kind of mindset that a lot of entrepreneurs have is something that's hard for people who don't run businesses to understand or accept even. And that's, I think, where a lot of this tension like in our churches can stem from. It's like, well, like can't we just be happy with what we have? Like you're supporting well. Like why are we taking, why would you take all this risk in your business? And it's something that is, it's hard to really bring someone who's not kind of on that ride with you along with, like, and I know people like entrepreneurs who even struggle with that in their marriages, like trying to be like, okay, well, can't we just like, but it's like one, like usually the guy has like a, you know, this is where I'm gonna go, and like I want to just headlong into things, and their wife's more like, well, you know, can we just get to a point where we're happy and it's good, and then we can just move on and just live comfortably. But yeah, that's, I think it's just a hard thing to help people along with. And but I do think it's important.
God gives us principles, but not a step by, you know, paint by number kind of thing. But I guess just you can't leave. I was just saying you can't leave your family behind, like you do, and expand your business. You can't leave your other responsibilities behind too. So that would be one check on how fast are you going to grow.
Yeah, which Jake actually did mention too, to be fair. That was definitely you got to balance those pressure points as you grow. Man, I think it's been a while since we've done a roundup because this has been going on long. We should probably try to keep it under an hour. I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. So, John, are you up for a speed recommendation? A little
Yeah.
speed top 10 most impactful.
All right. Yes, I'll go quick. We have a new column in RP called Ask RP because you know, answers are sort of easy to come by oftentimes. You can find somebody, but good questions are harder to come by. So we're really hoping that people will send us their questions, and then we'll do our best to find somebody to give them an answer. And we started things off just to give an example of what we're trying to do with our own question. We asked the five, sort of the editorial staff here, what are five of the most impactful books you've read outside of the Bible? And I picked ones from everybody here that I kind of know a little bit. So this isn't everybody's top one, but I'll just go one by one. So Jan Boersma, she is our copy editor, and yeah, maybe I won't do intros for everybody, but wonderful lady.
Copy editor. Go.
So she had one of her top five was Mom Enough. It's a collection of blog posts on mom's life, parenting, and one thing that's really cool about it, well, there's a lot of good things in it, but it's also free. You can download the ebook at desiringgod.org, and Mom Enough, it's a great book. I've read it too. Her one of her others is When Faith is Forbidden, and it's a kind of a devotional, 40 instances of what God's doing behind enemy lines, basically, in all sorts of countries like Iran and elsewhere. Some of them miraculous interventions by God, others just providing people the fortitude to deal with the persecution that comes with loving the Lord there. A very encouraging book, When Faith is Forbidden. Marty Mandrill had a few that I didn't know. So the one I did know is called Cold Case Christianity. It's by J. Warner Wallace. And he was a former detective on a police department, and he basically uses his forensic training to make a case for Christianity. He's coming at it like a detective, and it's a really fascinating book. Marty liked it. It's also one of my dad's favorite books. I think he's read it a couple times now. Mark Penninga had a favorite that is many people's favorite, Just Do Something by Kevin DeYoung. Short book, great to give to like grad or something, trying to figure out what you're going to do with life, trying to figure out who you could ask out on a date. Don't wait for a sign from God. God has put that in your responsibility to seek out. He said, don't date a pagan. You know, don't do some horrible career. Don't become a gambling executive or something. Like, he rules things out, but then he says, go and figure things out. That's part of the fun. So Just Do Something. It's not as hard as we make it out to be. Another one was The Grace and Truth Paradox by Randy Alcorn. We just mentioned his treasure principle. Grace and Truth Paradox is that Jesus came down full of grace and truth. That's a passage in John. Well, we are often graceful. And so then we were just talking about accommodations. You can be very graceful in your accommodations. You can just give them everything. But then have you been truthful? You can also be very truthful without grace. And I think maybe in 20 years ago, that might have been one of the struggles Canadian Reformed churches had to be. We are very truthful, but maybe we weren't always gracious. Jesus was both, and we can be both. We can imitate him and be both. Alexander Ellison had Ali Beth Stuckey's You're Not Enough, which is... yeah, you're having self-esteem issues. You don't think you measure up. You don't. How's that for an answer? But Jesus does. And none of us do, and fall on him. It's a wonderfully encouraging book. A favorite of a few people I know as well. I'll finish up with three of my own because I know all of the ones that I recommended.
Sure. At the end of it, John. Okay.
Yeah. Randy... Chuck Colson's God and Government. There are a lot of people wondering whether we should bring Christianity to the public square, whether we should be public Christians, because what does a voter care who isn't a Christian about what God has to say in the public square? Through stories and one story after another, Chuck Colson shows how God has used public Christians in the American setting. And it is such a wonderfully encouraging book. There's one guy who got something through in the 1970s. There was a restriction on abortion funding overseas, that the United States couldn't fund abortions overseas. That little piece of legislation lasted decades against the most hostile of forces. So God can use people to the glory of his name in politics too. Another one was Randy Alcorn. He is a favorite of myself as well. Heaven. If you've ever wondered I'm not a great singer. The idea of singing to God's praises in heaven endlessly, yeah. So Alcorn kind of presents a different understanding of what it means to glorify God now. Why would it be that different in heaven? And it's just going to be more pure. Like, we won't be encumbered by sin. We will take up challenges. So he's very, it's a wonderful book in that he delves into what the Bible says. He does bring speculation to it, but he marks the difference. He goes, I'm not sure about this part, but what do you think? And so I love the way that he's careful in his speculation. It's a sizable book, but I've given it to a few people, and yeah, they've appreciated it. Final one is Love That Dog. I just said I'm not the greatest singer. I also don't like poetry. So there's just something wrong with me, because lots of things in the Bible, God used poetry to convey what he's saying. So I am wrong in not liking poetry. This book has partially won me over. It's written by a fifth, sixth grade narrator, and he doesn't like poetry either, but every assignment in the book is for him to write a poem in the style of a particular poet. He's trying to deal with, we discover that his dog died, and we don't know that early on. He just keeps talking about this dog he hates, and then finally, through the power of poetry, he is finally able to deal with the death of his dog in a way that saying it would never been adequate. So it's a very powerful little book. Gave it to a pastor, and he loved it too. So I would highly recommend that one too. There you go, Tim.
Right on. Very good. Okay. Now we got, well, to make sure we get that in the show notes, so everybody can go check those out if they want.
Yeah.
Right on. All right. Thanks, fellas. We got through it. It's a bit of a longer one, but I think we had some good spirited discussion. So it was a lot of fun.
That was very fun.
Awesome.
Right on.
Thank you,
Cool. All
James.
right. We will catch you, everybody, on the next episode of Real Talk. And as always, feel free to get in touch and send us your ideas, comments, questions, anything like that. And until next time, keep having real talk. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Real Talk. We really appreciate you taking the time to listen or watch the show. If you want to send us your feedback, and we'd love to hear it, please email us at reformedrealtalk@gmail.com. If you want to find us online or social media, we got a lot of great content there. Just search Reformed Real Talk and we should come right up. This show is created and produced by myself, Lucas Holtfluer, and Tyler Vanderwood, and our wonderful podcast manager who does all the editing is Mariah Tamaga. So we're really thankful for her contribution to the show as well. That's all for now, folks. Thanks for watching or listening, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.